You have, no doubt, become increasingly aware as you have studied the Bible that it is unique in every direction. It is indispensable in that it touches life at every point. This is especially true when it deals with love and romance. No phase of marital life is omitted. In these modern days of disastrous sexual license, premarital sex experiences, widespread divorces, and the absence of real home life, how wholesome it is to turn to the Bible for guidance as to all that concerns love and the home. The Bible gives dignity and rightness to the exquisite intimacies of love in marriage. By ordaining marriage, God planned that men and women, through physical union, should create a oneness unique in human experience. In Genesis 2, 24 and 25, it shows God's divinely instituting of his plan. They shall be one flesh, talking about the man and his wife. Sex is a sacred and sobering area of life when seen from God's viewpoint in the Scriptures. Wouldn't you agree that as you have sought to gather out the promises covering the many phases of marital life, that you have discovered the Bible to be a bold book? The Bible is not afraid of words which make some cheeks burn. It is my sincere wish that you find freedom in this kind of honesty with your group. It is somewhat refreshing to read the Bible's unsullied, charming stories of the wooing for the affection of the one who is to be your companion for life. The Song of Solomon, a much misunderstood book, is devoted to the art of and the right kind of heart for making love. This is the reason I put it down as a third possible project for you in preparation of this study. In C.I. Scofield's introduction to this ancient love book, in his reference Bible, we are told of the twofold interpretation of Solomon's work. Primarily, the book is an expression of pure marital love as ordained of God in creation, and the vindication of that love as against both asceticism and lust, the two profanations of the holiness of marriage. The secondary and larger interpretation is of Christ, the Son, and his heavenly bride, the Church, which is expressed in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 1 through 4. Answering the question as to how this book became a part of Holy Scripture, Dr. H.A. Ironside offers a solution that Jewish teachers thought of it as designed by God to give the right apprehension of sexual love. They thought of it as the glorification of wedded life, and if we conceived of it from no higher standpoint than this, it would mean that it had a right place in the canon of Scripture. Wedded life in Israel represented the very highest and fullest and deepest affection at a time when, in the nations surrounding Israel, woman was looked upon as mere chattel, as a slave, or as the object of a man's pleasure to be discarded when and as he pleased. But it was otherwise in Israel. The Jewish home was a place where love and tenderness reigned, and no doubt this little book had a great deal to do with lifting it up to that glorious height. Everyone in your class will not be going back to a place where love and tenderness reigns. Some may be trying to deal with a wife who is not a real companion. She may be a street wife like Tamar, or a window wife like Jezebel, or a nagging wife like Job's wife, or perhaps a worldly wife like Lot's wife, or a cruel and vicious wife like the mother of Herodias. The sad and lamentable problems in the physical area could be greatly curbed if the professed lovers would communicate and work their problems together. Even though they may be married to someone like we described a moment ago, ask them to remember the old-time promise, "In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths." That's Proverbs 3:6. "All thy ways" includes the way of a man with a maid, as pointed out in Proverbs 30:10. Divine wisdom will allow any man the ability to make sound judgments in this area. There is no disgrace or dishonor if there are problems, but there is disgrace and dishonor if the problems are not faced and handled. But the promises connected with true marriage can only be fulfilled in behalf of those who decide to unite against their difficulties. After deliberately and prayerfully examining their love and all that a permanent love bond involves, then they can experience what God has so beautifully planned that they would. The God who inspired the Bible is the same God who made the physical union of man and woman a part of his creative plan. Because he wants his creatures to be well-adjusted in every area of life, he desires that sex be the means of mutual contentment rather than frustration. Someone has well said that the physical frustrations of a marriage will rarely be reconciled, nor will either partner be content if one of them has a wounded spirit. When the spirit of your wife is wounded, the very spirit of your marriage is damaged. In the Institute of Basic Youth Conflicts, there are some ideas offered which might cause the spirit of a wife to react to the spirit of her husband. One cause is awareness that she is not first place in his life. The husband is to be the head of his wife for the purpose of expressing his love to her by meeting her needs. She senses when he is not relating his life around the needs and goals of the family, when he is preoccupied with other people or possessions or activities. The second cause is failure to recognize her attempts to please him. The wife's attention to immediate details and her desire to express her love to her husband may often motivate her to do special things for him. When he fails to recognize these or express appreciation for them, he is being insensitive to her need for admiration and praise. Proverbs 31, verses 28 through 31 confirm this. The third cause of a wounded spirit is unfavorable comparison with other women. The wife is deeply hurt when her husband admires in other women the appearances or abilities she lacks. The fourth cause is lack of spiritual leadership. As we mentioned earlier, there is a deep longing in a wife for spiritual leadership. When you and I as husbands fail to provide this or show disinterest in it, she finds herself unable to place her full confidence in us and may seek this leadership from others. The fifth cause is rejection of her opinions as unimportant. The husband tends to evaluate his wife's opinions and requests in the light of her larger frame of reference rather than her immediate frame of reference. The wife is hurt through his lack of showing deference and is hindered in revealing blind spots in her husband's judgment and character when he responds that way. A sixth cause is a lack of inner discipline. A wife's admiration of her husband is greatly damaged when she senses in him lack of discipline resulting in anger or moral weakness. When her attempts to correct this are met with silence, her wounds are made more acute. These are a few of the causes of wounds in the spirit and the failure in the genuine joy of the most intimate relationship two people can experience. Prayerfully consider if any of these could have taken place in your home. If so, don't resist God's command in Ephesians 5:21 to submit yourselves to one another. Dignity and rightness can be restored to the exquisite intimacies of love between a man and his wife. Ask God where to begin. He promises to tell you. Isaiah 30:21 says, "And thine ears shall hear a word behind thee, saying, This is the way, walk ye in it."